Now proceed with the fourth case, Fernandez et al. Versus Keisler. You're Mr. Winters?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
May it please the Court. I'm David Winters of Butler Rubin, Saltarelli & Boyd, LLP, and I represent the petitioners in this case, in this consolidated case. The petitioners are for Florencio Jimenez Mateo, Omar Sendejas Fernandez, and Julio Calderon. At issue in this case is whether the petitioners have been convicted of a state offense described by the felony portion of 21 U.S.C. 844A. Today I'll describe why that issue should be resolved in the petitioner's favor. First, because this Court's recent decision in Pacheco-Diaz does not apply to this case. Second, because this Court should apply a strict categorical comparison approach, which does not incorporate a hypothetical component. Finally, should the Court find that there is any that is an equal poise in the interpretation of the statutes that are relevant to this appeal, the Court should apply the rule of lenity in the petitioner's favor. None of the petitioners have been convicted of an offense that prescribes or punishes recidivist drug possession. This is uncontested, and it's the most important fact in this case.
I'm going to stop you just for a moment and ask you how you factor in the fact that in Pacheco-Diaz, we weren't presented with the argument that Pacheco had not been charged as a recidivist in state court.
Well, Pacheco-Diaz was a sentencing guidelines case. This is an immigration case, and this case is different. And so the fact that there wasn't a gateway conviction is actually quite important. And it's a key distinction, actually, between this case and the holding in Pacheco-Diaz. As I said earlier, the first reason that Pacheco-Diaz does not apply is in this important gateway requirement under the INA that there be a conviction. This language, in pretty much every relevant application of the definition of aggravated felony in the INA, there is a sort of a gateway requirement that the alien be convicted of an aggravated felony. Now, of course, U.S. Sentencing Guideline 2L1.2 also requires that a defendant have a conviction for an aggravated felony. But we aren't aware of any relevant precedent interpreting the requirement that there be a conviction in the sentencing guideline context. That's not true in the immigration context. There are several authorities directly on point that add teeth to that requirement that there be a conviction. This morning we called to the Court's attention, and we apologize for the lateness of this, the Court's recent decision in Knudsen versus Gonzalez, where this Court interpreted the phrase convicted of in the context of removability and the application of the aggravated felony designation. The Court provided that removability was predicated on a convicted offense described in 1101A43. In that case, the issue was whether the alien was convicted of an offense which involved fraud or deceit greater than $10,000. The alien pled guilty to one count of bank fraud, causing a loss of around $7,000. That was what the alien was convicted of. That was what the alien was convicted of. But the alien stipulated that, for sentencing purposes, the loss was greater than $20,000. The agency, of course, contended that Knudsen was an aggravated felony because he had admitted to a loss of greater than $10,000, which under Section 101A43 of the INA is a grounds for removability, or is a grounds for the alien to be determined as an aggravated felon. But the Court rejected that argument, saying that the INA had possessed an implicit distinction between convicted and unconvicted offenses. And the Court's language in this respect is important. I'm going to quote from Knudsen here, which is in turn quoting a Ninth Circuit case with approval. The Court said, to adopt the government's approach would divorce the $10,000 loss requirement from the conviction requirement because relevant conduct for sentencing purposes need not be admitted, charged in the indictment, or proven to a jury in order to be used to impose a restitution order or an enhanced sentence. Likewise, in this case, the government's approach would divorce the recidivist sentencing factor, the recidivist element of the state offense or of the federal offense, from the conviction requirement because just like used to be the case with relevant conduct, enhancement based on prior convictions need not be admitted, charged in the indictment, or proven to a jury to be used to enhance a sentence. So for the same reason this court required that the convicted of requirement have some teeth in the immigration context, that's also germane here. And incidentally, Conte versus Gonzalez is in accord with this court, and that's a First Circuit decision quoted in our initial brief, is in accord with this court's decision, Knutson, in emphasizing the gateway INA requirement that there be a conviction. And we are aware of no precedent that would ignore this in the immigration context. Now, there are other reasons that Pacheco-Diaz does not apply. One of them is that Pacheco-Diaz, as I said before, is a sentencing guidelines case. This is an immigration case. The Pacheco-Diaz decision was not intended to the Pacheco-Diaz decision was not intended to apply in anything other than the sentencing guidelines context is, in fact, suggested in the decision itself. In the text of the decision, the court said, discussing what the court perceived to be a circuit split on the issue before the court did not mention any of the immigration cases that are cited in our brief that are directly on point. The court did not mention Berhe. The court, Berhe versus Gonzalez, cited in both our brief and in our reply, and the government cited in its response and thought it was important enough to say that it was just flat-out wrongly decided according to the government's theory. Now, this is intentional, we say. The court didn't mention this authority that was directly on point, and by the way, it was briefed by the parties in Pacheco-Diaz. There's no mention of that precedent because it's not relevant, because the court understood that it was dealing with sentencing guidelines and that this particular definition of aggravated felony would interact with the INA in a different way than it interacts with the surrounding statutory provisions in the sentencing guidelines. And of course, this court in the decision Gonzalez-Gomez versus Akeem, an immigration case also interpreting aggravated felony, the very same provision at issue here, also interpreting what refused to rely or distinguish several cases in the sentencing guideline cases, interpreting the very same sentencing guideline provision that was at issue in Pacheco-Diaz. This court can follow Gonzalez-Gomez's lead in this regard. Why? Different context, different concerns, and a different interaction with the surrounding statutory framework. There's another reason that Pacheco-Diaz doesn't apply, and that's, of course, because there's already controlling precedent, Supreme Court precedent on point, and I refer here, of course, to the Supreme Court's decision in Lopez versus Gonzalez. Lopez compels a simple, straightforward, categorical comparison approach, which immigration authorities should use to apply to determine whether a state offense is an aggravated felony. Pacheco-Diaz is a sentencing guidelines case. It should not alter this approach. And I would call the court's attention to the court's holding in Lopez versus Gonzalez. The court said that a state felony offense is a felony punishable under the Controlled Substances Act only if it prescribes conduct punishable as a felony under the Controlled Substances Act. Substituting state offense for it, the only interpretation that makes sense, we see that the court in its holding is actually directing immigration authorities to focus on the state offense, whatever state offense of an alien was convicted of, and comparing that strictly, a strict comparison approach. And there is no requirement in Lopez that any kind of second stage hypothetical question need be asked. In fact, the word hypothetical is not even mentioned once in the main argument of Lopez versus Gonzalez.
So how do we reconcile the language in the Lopez footnote number 6,
right,
then, which specifically refers to the federal recidivist provisions?
Your Honor, there's no need to reconcile it, because all footnote 6 says, and petitioners do not contest this, is that a conviction under the felony portion of 844A is an aggravated felony. What the footnote says is that may seem counterintuitive that an illicit trafficking offense could include something like recidivist possession. So we're not contesting that a conviction under 21 U.S.C.A., the felony portion, would be an aggravated felony. But that's not really the issue here. The issue here is, are the state offenses that these aliens have been convicted of equivalent to the felony portion of 21 U.S.C. 844A? That's really the analysis that this court is faced with. And Lopez says that the analysis is very simple and straightforward. This is an analysis, actually, that an immigration court can very easily apply. Well, all you do, again, is you look at the elements, you look at the actual statute under which the aliens were convicted, and you compare it to a felony under the CSA. And it's uncontested that none of the, again, and this point bears repeating, none of the petitioners have been sentenced or convicted under a statute that prescribes or punishes the kind of recidivist possession conduct that's punished and prescribed in 21 U.S.C. 844A.
So only if a state has the identical recidivism scheme as in the federal statute would it qualify? Is that your argument?
Well, in this case, and for example, the petitioners could have been. Petitioner Sendejas Fernandez and petitioner Jimenez Mateo could have been convicted under the recidivist portion of the Illinois statute at issue. They weren't. And with respect to Calderon, the marijuana statute that he was convicted under, there is a recidivist portion to that. But to the extent that that creates a little a concern with the court that maybe there'd be a uniformity issue, and this was sort of the government's point in their response. Well, what about the uniformity concerns, the government says? Well, what the government misses is that that kind of disuniformity is not what the cases that are interpreting the categorical approach are concerned with. It doesn't bother and shouldn't bother this court that a state may not punish a particular type of offense, or may not, for example, in the case of Calderon has never been convicted of a felony. He only has two misdemeanor convictions for less than 10 grams of marijuana. If you're convicted two or more times of more than 10 grams of marijuana, you are eligible for a recidivist bump under the Illinois statutory framework. That's not true for Calderon because he was never convicted for an amount of more than 10 grams. But the uniformity concerns that the cases have been concerned with, the type of uniformity, I see that I'm on into my rebuttal time, but I'd just like to finish this point. The uniformity concern here is different. Cases addressing the uniformity issue in the past have been concerned with the problem presented by the fact that the distinction between they were concerned that a state, by labeling something a felony or a misdemeanor, could control the immigration consequences. Not that the actual conduct for which the individual was convicted of would control the outcome, but the label that the state placed on the actual offense could be determinative of whether or not somebody was an immigration consequence. That's the uniformity that the cases have been concerned with, and that's the uniform. And that uniformity problem is not presented here, so the court should not be troubled with it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Levings.
May it please the court, my name is Jennifer Levings on behalf of the Attorney General in this matter. Your Honors, the court has already resolved the central issue in this case, and it's Pacheco-Diaz holding that an alien's second or third conviction for drug possession is an aggravated felony, regardless of how the state treated it below. I will emphasize for the court that the recidivist enhancement provisions of the Controlled Substance Act are not elements. They're not something that the government can charge. They are never going to match up to state recidivist provisions because those are also not elements of an offense. So a categorical approach is just inappropriate in this realm.
Ms. Levings, help me here.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Suppose a criminal defendant is caught selling 25 kilograms of cocaine, clearly trafficking, and also has possession of one marijuana cigarette for his personal use. There's no dispute by either the state or the defendant that he's selling 25 kilograms of cocaine. Nevertheless, in order to get him to cooperate, for whatever reason, maybe to get to the kingpin, who knows what, the state decides to prosecute him only for possession of the one marijuana cigarette. Can the department declare that the petitioner is ineligible for relief from removal proceedings based on the trafficking of 25 kilograms of cocaine, even though the defendant was never convicted of, never charged with that crime?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, and that is completely separate factual situation than what we have here. You're talking about an uncharged he's not charged, he's not convicted of the drug trafficking. So under the federal approach, the federal felony approach, one possession of marijuana is not a federal felony or could not be a federal felony. So no, he would not be removable on that ground as an aggravated felon.
But you see, your brief argues that the federal government should not have its hands tied just because the state doesn't choose to charge someone as a repeat offender. But it seems to me that the federal government's hands are always tied whenever a state makes a prosecutorial decision not to charge someone with a crime that is the equivalent of a federal aggravated felony. Surely the federal government may decide which types of crimes constitute felonies for removal purposes. But that doesn't mean, it seems to me, it just doesn't mean that the government can control how any particular defendant is charged and convicted.
To some extent, the government can't control the state prosecuting decisions.
Ever.
Yes, there are times, and there's different reasons for plea agreements, and that's not really the issue in this case. I will point out that in this case, these defendants were all convicted of each of these offenses, these simple possession offenses,
no.
So there are convictions there.
But the state in these cases opted not to prosecute these petitioners as recidivists. And how is that different from a state's decision not to prosecute a defendant for a drug trafficking crime and charge him with simple possession instead?
Again, I will point out that the recidivist provisions are sentence enhancements, so there will never be a charge for it's whether the state would treat them as a recidivist for purposes of an increased sentence, not whether they're going to charge them. The government is unaware of any state that actually has a way for them to charge someone as a recidivist, and certainly the federal provisions don't mandate that either. It's just a sentence enhancement. As far as a state deciding not to charge someone as a drug trafficker, maybe they don't have enough evidence, whatever the reason, and they're only charging for simple possession, certainly, and I believe the Supreme Court recognized this in Lopez, they do recognize that sometimes the state's hand or the federal government's hands will be tied by the way the states choose to prosecute. However, and as they say, it would have been passing strange for Congress to intend that when they've specifically tied their classification of a crime to the immigration statutes and the criminal. I mean, here they've specifically tailored the aggravated felony provision to the Controlled Substance Act's recidivist provisions. It's not a generic in the sense that the definition of a controlled substance in the Controlled Substance Act is a generic definition. It's not tied to any specific federal provision. It's just a generic description versus the actual tying of the illicit trafficking into the federal criminal code. In that case, as the Supreme Court said, it would have been passing strange for Congress to intend that the states get around that by choosing not to treat someone as a recidivist, whereas Congress has specifically tied the immigration statute to the Controlled Substance Act recidivist provision, which the Supreme Court recognized in footnote 6 that it could do.
Now, the petitioners have claimed that under your approach, a federal possession misdemeanor offense, one that is actually prosecuted in federal court as a misdemeanor, can be treated by an immigration court as a federal felony based on evidence that the Department of Homeland Security submits regarding a prior conviction that was never at issue in the actual criminal proceedings.
I will point you to it, and I think the petitioners are a little confused as to how the provisions work. Section 1229A of Title 8 lists the documents that the government can introduce to prove the fact of a conviction. And that's what we're looking at here, the documents the government can present to show that these petitioners are aggravated felonies, just the facts of their prior convictions. This has nothing to do with the Taylor categorical analysis. It's completely separate. The government's burden with respect to an alien who's removable as an aggravated felon, as far as establishing the facts of the conviction, is not beyond a reasonable doubt. It's just clear and convincing evidence that the conviction exists, as far as this is not to establish that he is in fact an aggravated felon or that he's in fact ineligible for cancellation. All they're trying to do, all 1229A points you to, is what kind of documents the government can introduce to prove the facts of the conviction. Under that statute, it also has implementing regulations, which are at 8 CFR 1240.8. These are the types of documents the government, again, can introduce just to establish the fact of the conviction. So how the government goes about proving the facts of the prior conviction doesn't have anything to do with looking at whether they were the actual record of conviction for the predicate offense only. Here, especially with respect to petitioners Sendejas and Jimenez Mateo, they're not contesting that they're removable as aggravated felons because they are removable for the controlled substance violation alone. Whether or not they are determined to be aggravated felons, what they would like is relief in the form of cancellation of removal. Especially in those cases, the burden is on the alien to establish, not the government, the alien to establish that he is in fact eligible for relief from cancellation of removal. In that respect, the government can submit documents to show that he is not eligible for that form of relief. The government doesn't have to prove those convictions beyond a reasonable doubt. All it has to show is that, yes, petitioners Mateo and Sendejas both had 2 to 3 prior drug convictions, which could be treated as recidivist convictions under the Controlled Substance Act. So I believe that there's a little bit of confusion as to which provision of the INA that we're looking at with respect to how the government proves these prior convictions. Basically, petitioners are saying, we have these prior convictions out there, 2 or 3 of them, but the government can never get those before the immigration judge and can never establish that we are aggravated felons, despite Lopez's footnote, the footnote 6, which says that there are situations in which there are recidivists out there. If there's no way to match up the recidivist provisions of a state, how a state treats recidivists and the Controlled Substance Act recidivist provisions, there's no way any of these convictions could ever get before an immigration judge.
Well, you know, in reading your brief, I noted, you know, you said that the recidivist ingredient is a requirement based entirely on federal law and can be proved without regard to the elements of the state crime. And if that's true, and the fact of recidivism can be based entirely on federal and not state law, then why wouldn't the government need to comply with the elements of the federal crime and provide notice and an opportunity for a defendant to contest the prior conviction? In other words, what is worrying me is that the government is asking to have it both ways. You want us to look only at the federal crime, but you don't want the government to have to meet the burdens that are imposed by the federal law.
I believe that this issue is also addressed in Pacheco-Diaz as far as the government. I mean, Pacheco-Diaz talked about you can't rely on how the state chooses to treat a recidivist. That's not part of the actual conviction. If it could have been charged, if he could have been treated as a recidivist in the federal realm, then he's a recidivist for purposes of the Controlled Substance Act. it also should not matter whether, in the federal context, if these were federal drug crimes, whether the federal authorities had treated them as recidivists. They could be treated as recidivists.
You understand that in Pacheco, we weren't presented with the argument that he had not been charged as a recidivist.
Yes, Your Honor. I will also point out...
In state court.
I will also point out that as far as treating the 1101A43's aggravated felony provisions for sentencing purposes, this court should treat them the same in the alien removal and relief from removal context. The Supreme Court has recognized that national uniformity is important, and Lopez specifically addressed the guidelines cases as well, particularly the Ninth Circuit's approach to treating recidivism only for sentencing cases versus and not for the removal cases. The Supreme Court specifically said they want national uniformity for sentencing for illegal alien reentry, which is the Pacheco case, as well as in the removal context.
But won't aliens be treated differently depending on whether the state prosecutor decides to charge them at all? In other words, while Congress can control the categories of crimes that constitute felonies, the federal government cannot control the prosecutorial decisions that states make. And won't that always lead to some amount of lack of uniformity?
Yes, Your Honor, that could. And the federal government certainly doesn't have control over a state's decision not to prosecute someone at all. And as the Supreme Court recognized, there some disunity is to be expected, but
And yet, on page 30 of your brief, you state that it cannot be true that Congress intended that aliens who commit multiple drug offenses be treated differently depending on whether a state prosecutor decides to charge them as recidivists.
And that's charge them as recidivists versus charge them at all. I mean, if a state decides not to charge them at all, clearly the federal government will have its hands tied in that respect. But here we're talking about aliens who have been charged with 2 to 3 simple possession offenses. They've never challenged those actual convictions, the fact of the conviction. So the federal government's hands being tied with respect to whether a state decides to treat them as a recidivist is much different than whether the state decides to even treat them as criminals at all. And again, I would point you back to Lopez, which talks about there are times when there will be disunity among the states, how the states charge, but not in the recidivist realm.
So in other words, bottom line, the department can look behind the face of the conviction for simple possession and turn that conviction from one of simple possession to one of recidivist drug trafficking?
Not exactly, again, Your Honor, and I realize I'm out of time, but I think this is an important point. The categorically, these crimes, the two to three simple possessions, categorically, as far as elements, are match up with the state possession offenses as far as knowingly or intentionally possess a controlled substance. The only issue is the recidivist, which is not an element. It's a sentencing enhancement. So you don't have to look beyond the face of that conviction document to see. As far as what documents the government can introduce to show the facts of prior convictions, that again goes to a different provision, which is 1229A, and that is the documents that the government can offer to show the fact of a conviction. I'm not sure if you're understanding, but as far as the actual recidivist provision, that is not an element, so we are arguing that there's no way that's ever going to match up with a state offense, the recidivist, because neither the states nor the feds treat that as an element. So the categorical approach just doesn't apply to the recidivist portion, which I think Pacheco also deals with in saying that you can't look at what the actual conduct, how the state treated it. You look at the elements of the offense, which are knowingly or intentionally possess a controlled substance. at this point, all the government has to do then is establish that, especially with respect to aliens, Mateo and Sendejas, the burden is on them to establish eligibility for cancellation of removal. The government just needs to present some evidence, that's some reliable evidence that they are not eligible. And here that reliable evidence is certainly they've got these two previous convictions, which render them aggravated felons. As this court has said, they're aggravated felons for purposes of sentencing. The court should not treat them any differently for purposes of removal and relief from removal, particularly in light of Lopez's concerns that we have national uniformity with respect to guidelines cases as well as removal and eligibility cases. I don't know if that answered your questions enough. I can certainly...
It's a question without any question in my mind that the Supreme Court is going to have to wrestle with. So.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
Absent any further questions, the government requests that the court deny the petition for review.
Thank you. Mr. Winters? You got a couple minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Three points, and it bears repeating, that none of the aliens have been convicted of a state offense that prescribes or punishes recidivist conduct. I think that's a point that Judge Rovner elicited on questioning. Another point that Judge Rovner elicited on questioning the government was that prosecutorial discretion really is the government's issue. It really is the government's problem here. And they said as much in their response brief. And the problem what they have with prosecutorial discretion creates a couple of perverse consequences. Again, Judge Rovner elicited the fact that under the government's approach, an individual who's prosecuted and has two convictions for misdemeanor drug possession under 21 U.S.C. 844A, never been convicted of a felony, and is prosecuted only in federal court, and all of a sudden an immigration judge is supposed to take that extra step and transform two felony possession misdemeanor convictions into an aggravated felony.
Did you say you never prosecuted in federal court?
I'm sorry. An individual who was prosecuted and convicted in federal court two times, both for the same misdemeanor offense, the misdemeanor portion of 21 U.S.C. 844A. Under the government's approach, applying the hypothetical analysis the government wants to impose upon immigration courts, this individual will be transformed into an aggravated felony. And this is, at the very least, an odd result. Second point is, the government claims that there is a way to, that there's no way to match up the two. And that's patently wrong. There is a way to match them up. It's very easy. All the immigration judge has to do is take a look at the statute and compare it to a felony under the CSA. And if the two aren't the same, then it's not an aggravated felony. And there is a crucial distinction between a the government makes a little bit of noise about the fact that it's not an element. But the distinction between a misdemeanor and a felony is the prescription and the punishment for recidivist conduct. That's got to mean something. It should mean something, and petitioners ask this court to make it mean something and hold in the petitioner's favor and find that they are not aggravated felons. Thank you.
Thank you. Case will be taken under advisement.